the Chicagoverse podcast on the Dynasty Podcast Network, featuring interviews with Chicago's premier artists and industry and creatives and culture leaders. Hosted by Haima Black. Welcome to Chicago.
Haima Black here for Dynasty Podcasts, recording again for I think our third week in a row from Cards Against Humanity. Huge shouts out to Cards Against Humanity and the Chicago Podcast Co-op for having us here tonight. Claire Friedman, of course, doing amazing work, doing God's work, putting podcasters here in this space.
Really literally, appreciative. Literally God's work.
Yeah. Shout out Prove Krivoshe. Man, I'm not judging. My name is so difficult on paper. Krivoshe, it's a great last name, though. So we have Prove behind the boards here, running the live stream here for Dynasty Podcast. My name is Haima Black. I host this podcast, and I'm here tonight with Rich Jones. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Wonderful.
So you are something we've been doing this year. I kind of talked about a little bit off mic. Something we've been doing this year is really focusing on bringing on guests who we have not spoken to before, who, you know, I've seen doing really cool creative work in the city, and you're definitely under that definition, man. You're somebody who I've been seeing doing really cool things with music around Chicago, so I'm really glad we got to have you up here tonight.
Thank you so much for having me, man.
Yeah. We always start the interviews kind of getting some background, like talking about, you know, when did music start for you? How did this start for you? Kind of when did music enter your life? Give us some background on that.
I was really fortunate. Both of my parents were creatives. My mom was in bands in the late 70s and 80s, and my dad, he worked at the Reader. So, you know, he had, you know, just by growing up in those offices, it was really cool to just be around a lot of interesting, creative people. And it's the sort of thing where, like, I'll be honest, I don't think I appreciated it as much when I was a kid, but I more so appreciate it now. It's like, oh, I had a lot of really cool situations to be in, and nothing like really like, oh, I was with so-and-so famous person. It was just interesting, cool people. So that was pretty sweet. And, you know, obviously both of them had, in my opinion anyway, really great taste in music and had a very eclectic taste in music. So, you know, growing up, I just had just really wonderful things to listen to and to be exposed to. And then, you know, at a very, very young age, you know, I would, you know, when I was like 3 or 4 years old, this is when hip hop's really, really taking off. And, you know, it, you know, you heard it in the streets, you heard it out and about, and that's how I was first exposed. I remember like my parents even pointing out people rapping in front of me when I was like a really little tiny kid. They're like, look, they're rapping. And like, you know, to them, it's just this novelty. I'm sure, you know, at a certain point of life, they may have regretted, you know, pointing that out, like, oh no, look what we did. But no, in all seriousness though, you know, I was able to, just through the years, it's been nice to take, you know, the things that I came upon and discovered and combine it with what they gave me, you know, so, and especially to appreciate what they gave me even more as I kind of continue on my musical journey. In terms of like actually recording and getting into it, I've been doing it for about 10 years now, since I was about 17.
It's crazy.
What's even crazier too is like the people I've worked with, you know, through some twist of fate, like they're still doing music, and then a bunch of them are doing some really cool things. Like the very first person to record me is this guy, Ben Cafresi, who tours with Prob Cause. And then my other friend, Benny Nice, he runs 119 Productions. They do the Union Event series, and then he also did video work, and, you know, he also is his own solo artist. So, you know, it's interesting to see people that I started with still, you know, involved. Like they have, you know, maybe they work gigs, but they also are, you know, very much paying attention to their art. Yeah, and then, you know, in terms of actually, like, taking, you know, what I've worked on and actually making, like, total products, you know, that really kicked off kind of after I got out of school. I had the time and the inclination and the drive to really, let you know, give this a go in terms of, like, let's put together, like, a compact project and start packaging this versus just Lucy's on MySpace or whatever.
Man, so you just gave us so much. So much. It's awesome. I have to, like, before we move any further, I have to point out my favorite part of what you just said, which is that you're talking about being 3 years old, being exposed to hip hop in the streets, mm-hmm. which creates this visual of you in these streets, 3 years old, mm-hmm. just like hustling, like not, handing out your CD.
Nah, you know, it's baby me.
Yeah, like you're in Pilsen. Yeah.
No. It was, I forget where we were. It was somewhere on the north side, I think. I remember very clearly, though, my best friend and I, dancing the Tootsie Roll on Michigan Avenue as little kids. We couldn't have been more than 3 years old, and we were just having so much fun. It was just, it felt so good.
So you have been in these streets since the very beginning, man. That's really cool about the Reader thing, too. Like, what era was your dad working for the Reader? Give us some background on that.
He was there from the 70s up until 2005.
And, wow.
Yeah, so he was there. He was he did some, like, some writing for them, but mainly he was on, like, the production end. Like, he was head of production in terms of, like, the layout of the paper.
That must have been amazing. So much to see during that time, even from the back end, just, like, how the industry changed. So
definitely.
Very cool.
I mean, you know, frankly, again, like, just being around interesting people, like, different walks of life in the creative community, just, like, great graphic designers, great writers, great minds, quite frankly. Like, I know one of his old coworkers is now, like, writing history books. Like, he wrote a book about that involves, like, I think, like, the Loyola basketball team or something like that. You know, even after they've gone, you know, stopped working there, they're still pursuing their passion, which is pretty sweet.
So I got to imagine that all of that, like, being around all that kind of creative energy, all of that, you know, passion for, you know, like, the kind of artistic pursuits, that definitely, it looks like, had an imprint on you from the beginning.
Certainly. Yeah. I think, you know, that said, though, in terms of, like, finding, I think, and when it comes to creating or even just getting into any sort of creative endeavor, you know, what's the access point? Like, what was the point where you decide that this is something I'm actually going to try? And you start to, like, at least attempt to feel comfortable. And I know for me, like, you know, it was like 12 years old. I remember I was walking the dog and I was just trying to put words together. Just, you know, pretty much freestyling, just trying, because right. I didn't know how to write. I don't know. I remember the first raps I wrote in sixth grade because I was listening to the Blue Streak soundtrack and they had some great jams on that. Hot Boys, all that jazz. But
was that like one of the surfer movies?
No, it's the one with Martin Lawrence where he's the diamond thief.
Oh, okay.
And he gets out of jail and then poses as a cop so he can get the diamond that he left in the building, which is now a police department in L.A. Yeah. Great flick. The bad guy from The Mask is also in that movie. Luke Wilson is in that movie.
The Golden Age of Cinema.
Also in that movie. Yeah.
Chappelle used to be in a bunch of movies.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Low-key cameo professional.
So, okay. Awesome. So, lots and lots going on, man. You've got this great background with music. You've been doing this for a long time. I think the thing that people are really seeing with you right now, of course, is this record, Pink Slips. It came out February, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How has the response been on your end? Like, how have you seen people react to it?
Honestly, it's been really good. I think, you know, with this project, more than anything else I've worked on, it's not so much about the instant response that I'm so worried about. I really want to see how I feel about this in a year because, you know, it's not like we have a crazy budget to, like, you know, blow this out to the masses or whatever through PR. We really have to do this grassroots. And part of that's, you know, just very organically, like, giving this to people, showing this to people. I think, you know, it's unfortunate, I think, in some respects, the way that people just churn out material. And I think some people, if they have the fan base and they have the energy to do it, you can just throw stuff out there and people are going to love it. And, you know, much respect to the people that can do that. I know for me, you know, just the fact that I can now find myself at a point where I'm consistently putting out something, I think is a really wonderful place to be. For a long time, like leading up to even last year, I didn't put out anything. It was just me doing shows and just kind of trying to build my confidence up to do it. Cause back in 2013, I put out a project that I was really proud of. And I thought, man, you know, I just like blitzkrieged this, like, this is about to, like, you know, do what it does. Like, people are going to go crazy. And then it was crickets. And, you know, I said this, you know, to other people in other interviews too, like, I didn't do anything to warrant it getting the response that I wanted. So, you know, the 2 years off was kind of to figure out, like, what do I have to do to make this work? And so with last year, you know, putting out, I put out an EP called Love Jones. I put out a project called Pigeons and Waffles. And, like, that was kind of me reintroducing myself in terms of content and all that. And then this year, now it's like, okay, now that people are kind of starting to see that not only is it shows, but I can actually take something home with me or listen to something, you know, anywhere. I think having that sort of accessibility has been really helpful. you know, and then again, you know, with the live show component, though, making sure that the live show, you know, when I do have it in Chicago is good. I know the show we had at Shuba's last month, it was just a really special night. Like 100%, I'm not joking. My whole life was in that room, from people that knew me like from the womb to like last week. And that to me was just, you know, it was cool to see that sort of like full circle sort of thing happen, especially considering that the project took over 3 years to complete, you know. So it was like a lot of a very, you know, very nice way to kind of sum up all that work, because, you know, the whole concept of the project Pink Slips, you know, when you get fired, you get pink slipped. It came out of me getting fired from my job and my boss saying to me, knowing you as a person, you should do anything but work a job if you can help it and just do music. And, you know, at the time at like 23, 24 years old, I'm just like, you know, why not? And, The great side effect of that, though, there were some real low points. You know, I did have to work some side gigs here and there. But at the end of the day, I really did learn, most importantly, the value of a day, the real value of time. I think it's something that you don't necessarily get when you're working for somebody else, because, you know, you're not doing what you want to do. And I'm not saying like people should just loaf and, you know, just, you know, completely blow their time. You know, I certainly had plenty of those days too, but, you know, sometimes you need some of that period to also understand, wait a second, like I need to get going. This needs to be filled with things that are actually going to enhance and like push things forward too.
There's so much I want to break apart in there. So I'm going to kind of like, so let's kind of move through this. One of the things that really stood out to me is that you were talking about for a while, the music was not getting the response you wanted. And something I've noticed with Pink Slips is it seems to me, you know, I don't know you, this is the first night we've met, but like I have seen Pink Slips getting recognition. You had the show at Shuba's last month. You had, a shout out in the reader. You know, that was
really special. Any time that, like, obviously with the family connection, and then nothing I've gotten from that is like from, I haven't back channeled anything. It's been by my own merits. Like,
and so like they put you on like the front cover or something because. So I guess the question is like, what do you think the difference was with this project versus the earlier work, where this is getting in front of people? It is getting recognition. It's getting on the blogs. It's getting you a show at Shuba's. Why do you think that this had that response, whereas the other material didn't?
I think part of it is, in the best way of putting it, you know, it was funny, like, I think last week or the week before was the 5-year anniversary of my first project, Sweater Weather.
And I saw that. That was something I was going to ask you about.
And I listened to it, and, you know, it's funny. I didn't hate it. You know, I definitely, like, there's parts where I'm just like, oh, man, facepalm, but, you know, in the same breath, it's like, man, you know, not bad for 22, 23, and, you know, I'm just figuring this out. And in a lot of ways, it was a real growth process for me. Like, the engineer for that, Kyle Resto, he's actually, you know, again, like, people I've worked with going and doing great things. He's out at Jungle City. He got a credit on The Life of Pablo. Like, he's doing his thing. He produced Magic Man with Taylor Bennett.
Yeah.
He's doing his thing. He's hustling. Montana Max, that's my big brother. To be able to, like, have him, you know, be a part of that process. You know, him and I grew a lot. You know, it wasn't all peaceful. You know, him and I definitely had to, like, figure out how best to coexist. And, you know, we're better off and better friends and better brothers for it.
And that's a great Tiny Toons reference, by the way. Montana Max. I love that.
Oh, no. He's, you want to bring someone on the show, bring him on. He could talk your ear off. He's the best.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. And if you're going to go with the Tiny Toons reference, Montana Max is the way to go.
Oh, most definitely.
No, he owned it.
Definitely. But no, I think, you know, so taking from that and from that experience, because that was, you know, being the first project, being the first of anything, that's when you're really catching people's attention. And, you know, one thing I've also had to just recognize and just have it be what it is, you know, I'm getting older, and it doesn't mean that, you know, that I have to stop at all. It just means to recognize that, like, in terms of, like, my friends that I grew up with, you know, they're having families, you know, they're having jobs, they're moving, they have other focuses. So it's like, you know, I can't be getting frustrated. Like, where are they on a Wednesday at 9 p.m.? They're asleep or they're taking care of their kids.
They're watching Grey's Anatomy.
Exactly.
In Naperville.
Oh, no, I cut those people off way long ago. No Grey's Anatomy. But no, seriously, like, you know, and just pretty much just being appreciative of any attention, because, you know what? there could be, it could be five plays on SoundCloud. It could be zero. You know, the fact that there's any recognition at all, like, really, you take it for what it is and just use that as something to build upon for the future. So I'd say kind of that sort of mindset, I think, is also why there's been a better recognition. There's not really any unneeded anxiety attached to the process anymore. I think at this point, it's just more so trust in the process and executing. And then, you know, obviously with something, with the amount of time that went into making this, it just was apparent that we'd also really, if we had to make a phone call or, you know, reach out to certain people and be like, hey, we really want you here, like, this is very special, you know, it's that moment to do it.
Right.
It's like, you know, are you gonna cry wolf every single show? No, but this is the one where you're definitely gonna get the word out and make sure everyone's there. I mean, in my spare time, I also, you know, I've done street teaming work, so I was also able to take that and really, you know, get the posters out there and spread that as well, which is something I haven't really done for any of my events. And, you know, to have people tagging me and be like, oh my God, I saw you out here, like, this is amazing, like, you know, that's a really good sign too leading into it. And to kind of see that anticipation, that buildup, I mean, as I said, like, I know before the first act even went on, you know, I felt bad, you know, putting my friend Def C on first, but I knew he was a great person to kick off. But before he even goes on, you know, there's over 100 people already there. So it wasn't like he had, like, no audience.
Right.
And by the time his set was done, there's like 150 plus. And then when I go on, there's like 200 plus. So, you know, it was just beautiful.
And you know what, man? The street teaming experience is really important. A lifetime ago, early 2000s, even like maybe the tail end of the 90s, I was street teaming for Metro.
Oh, wow.
Like 2000, 2001, maybe 2002. And I saw a lot of people who are now, you know, who are out there in their music career who also passed through those doors. And I think that having that kind of experience behind you where it's pretty humbling, you know, you're out there like after a show, maybe, like, I remember these nights where it's like 3 a.m., it's February, it's cold, nobody wants to take a flyer. And it teaches you a lot about promotion, connecting with people, all these things. So I think that kind of stuff is really valuable to have that experience as an artist and then be able to, like, transfer that over to actually creating awareness of your own work.
It's sweat equity to
it
the
is,
core.
Yeah.
And I think it's the, you know, it makes you respect the process more. But I think also, you know, it's something that I don't think it's something that I think people need to be more cognizant of, is having something tangible to put in front of somebody. Because I think at this point, I think there's a very interesting inclination I'm seeing, and I don't know if it's purely niche or if it's something that could be more widespread. You know, we'll see what happens. But I think having people that are more willing to have, you know, real experience, have a more experiential type events, and then also have, like, tangible things go hand in hand with that, like, you know, through zines or through anything else, I think that sort of thing, I'm seeing a bigger prominence with that, especially, like, when you look at how groups are having to change, in my opinion, at least with the ones that I see killing it, they've had to change what their definition, even what merchandise is. Like, you know, I know for me, you know, we decided we'd make prints and then just have, like, the link to the project on the back. You know, that way you have something you can take home. It's something that, like, is definitely part of the project. It stands on its own as a piece of art, plus you have access to the music through there. It's a different access point.
No, man, absolutely. And I think the merch is such an important component. Absolutely. Something else that stands out to me, and I don't want to dwell too long on this because I feel like this is the thing that everybody asks you about, but, you know, the title Pink Slips, it's clear from listening to it and it's clear from reading interviews with you and even talking to you now, this comes from a prior boss telling you, like, do anything but work. How does that hit you? Is it like, do you feel insulted when someone says that? Or do you think, wow, cool, this person's looking out for me and the path that I should be on?
You know, given the situation, I think it was meant to be a kind thing to say.
Okay.
And I don't think it was meant to be disrespectful. And I didn't take it disrespectfully, honestly. I was more so just mad I got fired. Because I didn't, at the time, I just didn't feel like that was legitimate. Looking back, it probably was. And sort of. But I mean, just like the way it was handled was very messy. And there's a lot of just things that just don't need to be brought up. But the point is, again, like, that doesn't happen. Who knows what's going on? Like, who knows where I'd be right now? It's definitely one of those flashpoint moments where all of a sudden you're just on a different path. And luckily, I don't know what it is. I just have been really good about taking whatever situation I'm in and making it okay. And part of that especially is just having a great group of people around me, or having great groups of people around me, especially, like, you know, I don't like to have, you know, the energies around me be static or stagnant. I think a lot of it is it's nice to just kind of spread yourself out and see, like, you know, especially like what's been really helpful the last year and a half has been really getting involved in other creative communities outside of the hip hop community. Mm-hmm. Especially like in the comedy scene, through groups like
Which Shithole. Chicago is a huge comedy scene.
Oh, amazing.
And it's
amazing.
Really, really talented. Like, I mean, obviously, okay, like Hannibal. Like, everybody mm-hmm. knows Hannibal. That's, like, the obvious answer. That's like saying Chance now. If somebody's like, who's blowing up in Chicago? You're like, Chance. Like, okay, I get it. But, like, you see this scene that's creating people like Hannibal, that's putting them out there, and there's so many people that aren't at that Hannibal level yet that are on their way. And I see the hip-hop, I kind of see them crossing over, but I see the comedy scene so much. Like, I see people I know in my Facebook feed, like, promoting these events nonstop, putting new people on, like, you know, you see these people getting up to specials and getting on to like Comedy Central. So the Chicago comedy scene is really, really like, I feel like doing some really special things right now.
Well, it's also, don't forget improv or sketch too. Mm-hmm. I was part of an awesome show at the Public House Theater with this guy, Tim Barron, and this girl, Heidi Cheek. It's the Timmy Heidi picture show. And that was honestly like, it, you know, again, like it's not what I'd call a traditional lane necessarily, but it was a very great show for me to do, especially because they're hilarious. It was really cool to like kind of watch how they work and watch their creative process. But more importantly, it gets me out in front of people that might not have known about me otherwise. Like, I think, you know, it's like with websites almost. So you look for unique visitors or whatever. For me, it's about finding unique audiences. And the way I look at it is if I'm doing my job, which is just kill it, then they'll, you know, hopefully at least somebody will like it. And luckily, you know, I've had a really good success rate just in terms of getting people to kind of tune in and stay tuned in.
Yeah, you know, and talking about the network you are connecting with on this project and on, you know, even your new song Gold, you've got a lot of collaborators, a lot of really talented people that you're working with that are appearing on the projects, you know, Taylor Bennett, the Oh My's, like a lot of Chicago people. Talk about kind of like who you collaborate with in the Chicago music scene, like why you work with these people, what your relationship is, all that.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, Montana Max, that's the first. I've known him since I was 14, you know, and then we reconnected serendipitously like 4 years later, and we've pretty much been, you know, best friends since. And, you know, so he's been a really wonderful person to kind of, you know, teach me just about different forms of songwriting. And also, you know, more importantly, especially when I was more focused on the hip hop genre, you know, just really learning the history of it. You know, it's really important to have those people in your life to kind of show you what was before you. Because we're all, as I know, the big quote for geology is standing on the shoulders of giants. And that's right. Very true. Regardless of what the field is, we're all standing on someone else's work. So, you know, to be able to have someone be like, I remember that summer I was 18 and I had knee surgery and I couldn't go anywhere. And I had my graduation money. And he said, I'm going to give you a list of albums to go buy with your graduation money. And I just sat and I ripped it all on my new MacBook that I was about to bring to college. And that was my summer. It was just on the phone with him talking hip hop and then listening to music and then talking hip hop.
Just getting that education.
Yeah,
what were some of those records?
We had Mobb Deep, The Infamous, Common Like Water for Chocolate.
Yeah, it's a classic.
Master Ace, Disposable Arts. And then later in the year, the record that I can safely say absolutely changed my life, you can listen to it front to back, Moment of Truth, Gangstar. Mm-hmm. You know, he really stressed to me as an MC to study guru. You know, his flow may not be the most interesting to some listeners, but at the end of the day, he's a fantastic writer because he's very on point. He's very on topic with what he's saying, but it's interesting. And, you know, after a while, once you've conditioned your ears to understand and get kind of used to the monotone, you know, paired with Premier's production, it's just like, there's really not a better sweet spot. I know my friends and I used to argue in college, like, what, you know, if someone didn't know what hip hop was, what's the project you'd give them? And I think like the tie was between like 36 Chambers or that.
Sure.
But yes. And then obviously like, aside, I mean, in terms of like some of the history stuff too, it was really important for me to have that. Cause prior to that, my listening had been mostly local. It was like a lot of like the Rogers Park, Evanston label stuff, like Evie Records, Gravel Records. Like the guys, you know, I mean, if you were working at Metro, then, you know, Chicago Rocks when mm-hmm. Mole Men used to do their big jams.
Yeah.
That was like Christmas for me as a kid. I remember the
that
first
was a minute
show.
Ago.
the first show I went to, I was 15, and Psalm 1 was on the bill. And I saw her perform, Verbal Kent performed, Longshot, Lord 360. It was like, you know, people that, it was like meeting my idols, because I could actually meet them, I could talk to them, I could support them. It just made sense to me.
So you've always been tapped into the Chicago culture, you know, like whether it's through your family, whether it's through attending these shows at the Metro, you know, like where you're really like engaging with like hometown artists. Like, it seems like that's a really key component of your work.
Again, it's I think what's accessible.
Yeah.
And you know, luckily I've had people that have been willing to kind of take me along and show me what's what. In terms of like more recent collaborations, like as you say, like the Taylor Bennett's, the Omis and all that, a lot of that again has just been serendipitous. The Omis, I ran into Maceo when I was working at Park West. He was going to see a friend that was like across from where I worked, and we exchanged numbers, and then pretty much from then, you know, I just got acquainted with them, and we've been fast friends ever since. So, you know, to get them to, you know, either get vocals or keys or whatever, you know, it's been cool to work with them and honestly learn from them, because, you know, prior to being around them, I hadn't really been around a lot of actual musicians. You know, so to be able to sit in on their sessions and just see how, you know, they conducted their sessions and, you know, like, oh, we need this, so we're going to call so-and-so, you know, and in a lot of ways, it kind of gave me confidence to do similar things. Like for the Gold record, you know, Nick called me just to see what I was up to. And I said, well, I'm actually at Soundscape. If you want to come lay some keys down, I'll buy you lunch. And he's like, okay, cool. So there you have it. You know, that, you know,
shout out Soundscape, man.
Yo, well,
it all comes back to Soundscape Studios.
Definitely. Yeah. So, you know, and then, you know, with Taylor Bennett, that was when, you know, my main home base for recording, you know, at least for this project, was at Classic Studios, working with Elton Chung. And you know, that was something where, you know, Taylor was there, and it just happened to be, he said, hey, we should do something. And I said, well, funny enough, I've got this right here, so you can hop on. And then, you know, it worked out. And then
he's a good dude, man. He's a friend of the podcast, and nice. I really like Taylor, and he's doing like such great work right now. That latest record is so good.
No, he's working real hard.
Yeah.
It's good to see him doing his thing.
So what's on deck for you going forward now that Pink Slips is out, now that you've kind of finished this, you know, kind of 2 years where you were putting things together and restructuring? Now that you're back, you're here, you've got this project, it's out in the world. What does it open up for you to do going forward this year?
I think aside from specific music endeavors attached to me, I know in the immediate, I've been throwing shows now, going on 4 years this April, at Tonic Room. It's been rebranded a few things. It started with my group SEC, because we got tired of bugging people for shows. So we're just like, we're just gonna throw our own and then book our friends. And then, you know, it's been really nice to, you know, be able to provide that and put some money in my friends' pockets. Maybe put a little bit of mine if I'm lucky on a given night. So you know, coming this April, 429. You know, yeah. It's going to be a nice, you know, a nice kind of capper for 4 years of just more and more shows. You know, it's called All Smiles now, because frankly, you know, it's generally a pretty happy vibe. So, you know, focusing on and just keeping that going and finding new talent for that. I know we were speaking earlier just about, you know, making a point to kind of sojourn into different areas to find, you know, people to work with. And, you know, luckily, Chicago, there's a lot of undiscovered talent, and there's a lot of people that are just waiting to get the call.
There's no shortage. Yeah.
And I think a big thing, honestly, I'm going to focus on, and, you know, it's something that, like, I frankly, you know, it's something I'd say I'm embarrassed, but I'm not, because I'm going to do something about it. I'm really trying to make a focus on, like, working with female artists. I really want that to be a thing, because I know, like, there was the whole Rhymesayers Psalm 1 blow up, and you know, sure. I'm not going to take sides or nothing, but it does highlight the fact that, like, there wasn't really any women on that lineup, and whether that's good or bad, you know, I think that maybe should have been different. So, you know, especially, you know, given that, you know, as I said, I ain't going to pick sides. It's something that I can directly control, so I'm going to do something about it. So I'm trying to make sure that I'm giving, the same way that someone's just waiting for the call, you know, maybe I can do the same thing for female artists, you know.
Dude, there's so much great female talent in Chicago. I mean, we had Holly Schaffner on this podcast a few weeks back. We've had Feline on a few weeks back.
She's really good.
She's so good. We have Sylvie Grace, who's a cellist. We're going to talk to her.
I have her on some stuff coming up.
Yeah, we're going to have her on at South By. And the list goes on and on. Yeah. I mean, there's so much great talent in general. And a huge amount of that is women in Chicago.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, making sure that they get their just due and kind of get a chance to grow as artists is mad important. And then, yeah, aside from that, man, I've also got I've got a project that I started last year in Las Vegas with my friend Ryan Lofty. He actually, we're going to be doing a set at the Oy Vey showcase at South by Southwest.
Yeah,
I'm really pumped for that actually, because we started this project kind of on a whim. I flew out there 2 days after the Super Bowl last year, and the only reason I say it like that is because that's when we first really got snow last winter, and I got out pretty much 2 days in, out in the desert wearing shorts, yeah. The happiest guy in the world. And we, you know, I pretty much went out there. I said, hey, like, you know, because he mainly, you know, at the time he was working on a lot of like tropical house records. We actually had a record come out last year called Universe and Me that did, you know, I think pretty well considering, you know, I'd never had a song hit 100K. Like, we got like between Spotify and SoundCloud like 150K, which is crazy to me.
That's insane. That's a huge number.
So, you know, to me that's a good sign. We should probably keep working. But even prior to that, you know, we just sat down. It's somebody I met in Chicago, really, again, serendipitously. I walked into a club, I introduced myself because he was friends of a friend, and then we just stayed in touch. And you know, he pretty much like, hey man, let's like come out to Vegas, we'll work on some records and see where it goes. And so out of this, you know, kind of, you know, just random decision to escape the winter and see where what happens, you know, it turned into, you know, I think two more sessions last year, maybe possibly another one soon, just to kind of wrap some other things up. But now we've got, you know, a whole batch of records to choose from that is decidedly not hip hop. It's definitely, you know, pop, soul, you know, it's another realm. It's nice.
Right on, man. So much going on. And I have to give a shout out, man. You did an event about a month and a half ago with my younger brother, Tomas de Medici, at Bucket Feet.
Good stuff.
So that's like, I wanted to make it to that event and I wasn't able to. But it's so funny. Like, my brother was already telling me, like, you know, and I was aware of you, but he was like, we got Rich Jones at this event. His music's really great. He's really cool. So it was really cool that you were able to put that together with my younger brother.
Well, that was really cool because my friend Vaporize from the Push Beats Collective, he reached out to me and said, hey, we've got this sweet charity event that you should, you know, I mean, you know, it's something that I think you want to be involved in. You know, and I showed up and it was a really great time. It was great meeting the people that run the foundation. It was, you know, nice to meet people in the room. It was just an interesting group of people to perform for. Yeah, I had a really good time that night.
Yeah, man, absolutely. The project is called Pink Slips. Where can people find that? I know it's on SoundCloud. Is it on Spotify? Is it on?
We're keeping it solo platform for the moment.
Okay.
SoundCloud.com/RichJonesMusic, or you can Google Rich Jones Music. In the off chance that you find the English trance producer, that's not me.
Right on. Rich Jones, thanks so much, man, for coming up. The record is called Pink Slips. Go find it now. I'll see you at South by Southwest, man.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to a production of Dynasty Podcast. Find more Dynasty Podcasts at DynastyPodcast.com. For the Dynamic Dynasty, Dynasty Descend.